Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your humble host, Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on passive income for the purposes of building legacy wealth, helping us hit that financial freedom number that I talk so often about. The vehicle that we use, the car that we drive to get there is rental real estate, buy and hold real estate for the purposes of cash flow. Now, one of the big pieces of this entire puzzle is taxes. And it's great to buy properties up front and worry about the cash flow a few years later, maybe after you pay it off, or if you follow the Gary Keller model of buying, you know, buy, own, and then cash flow. So it could be a few years. But involved in this entire process are taxes. How do we defer them? How do we mitigate taxes? And we know from past podcasts here that rental real estate really helps you wrangle the tax tiger, so to speak, and perhaps could be one of the best investment strategies in order to keep you from paying a lot in taxes. So today's guest is all around deferring our taxes and how to do it properly. My guest is Leonard Spoto. He's the Asset Exchange Company Marketing Operations and Sales Manager. He's a frequent keynote speaker and accredited course instructor on the subject of 1031 tax-deferred exchanges. He's presented his popular real estate and tax workshops to over 12,000 realtors, lenders, title professionals, and investors. And he's the author of dozens of published 1031 exchange-related articles. Leonard, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Clayton.
Well, it's my pleasure. And this is an important subject and one that I get so many questions from our investors and listeners on a regular basis on, you know, I'm doing a 1031 exchange. What are the rules? Will I pay taxes on this when? What about when I retire? Will I, you know, so many questions around this. So I'm excited to have you here on the show today. Today we're going to be talking about deferring taxes. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about two different strategies for the long-term deferment. So the idea of deferring and deferring until you die. And what happens after you die? Are you hit with those penalties? All of those things. But first, before we get to there, because I think it's really important, let's just talk about what a 1031 exchange is and why we would even want one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, Clayton, and it's been a pleasure to work with investors. We've, as you mentioned, worked with thousands of investors who are building wealth through real estate. And Section 1031 has been called one of the greatest wealth building tools available to investors. And the reason why is it allows you to defer that capital gains tax liability on the sale of an investment property. So if you're looking at just selling your property, depending on what state you're in a high state like California or Washington, your tax liability could be about 33 to 35%. So take about a third of your gain or your profit from the sale of your rental property and give it to the government if you're going to cash out. Now, obviously, that does not make sense if you're looking to build wealth through real estate. So what our investors are doing is they are taking advantage of Section 1031 within the Internal Revenue Code to sell their highly appreciated assets and defer that tax liability. Now, of course, in order to do so, you've got to jump through some hoops. There are several guidelines that need to be followed. But if you follow those guidelines correctly, you are able to defer that tax liability. So you're able to keep that wealth, that money that would have gone to the government, you're able to keep it in your pocket and use that money for additional purchasing power on your next transaction. So Section 1031 is a gift from the government. It really allows real estate investors to build wealth, continue to grow their wealth in real estate, and capitalize on the equity that they've built in their properties. Now, in order to qualify for that tax break, they, as I mentioned, are going to have to jump through a few hoops. So I'll break it down to you real simple terms of four basic guidelines that need to be met for any successful 1031. So, guideline number one, the properties involved, both on the sale and on the purchase side, need to be held for investment. And what we look at when we're determining whether a property was held for investment is two key things. Number one, what is the investor's intent when they bought the property? And number two, what are our tax returns showing? So we're going to very importantly, hopefully produce rental income from the property. If we're doing that, we are reporting the rental income on our properties, on our tax forms. We are depreciating the properties. And then very interestingly, the government also wants to see what our intent is. So if we're ever audited on a transaction, it's very important that we can prove that our intention was to use the property as an investment. And typically the IRS does not allow flips or development deals to be exchanged. Flips and development deals are considered inventory, which is specifically prohibited from being exchanged. So what we want to see is a history of rental activity on those properties for them to qualify.
Interesting. So you can't, that's interesting. I never knew that part of this. I mean, I just thought, oh, it's a house. It doesn't matter what you intend to do with it. You want to keep it for a short amount of time and make some profit on a flip. That's interesting that it really has to be held. So the government is encouraging buy and hold investing.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why is in states like California and Washington, where you've got a pretty aggressive state franchise tax board, the states really go after these type of transaction because there's a lot of revenue that's tax revenue that's deferred and the states aren't seeing, and you know, the IRS as well. So they've kind of latched on to the fact that the tax code specifically prohibits inventory from being exchanged. And the taxing authorities have taken the view that real estate can be inventory. If you're buying specifically with the intent to resell, that is the definition of inventory. So that could be a loaf of bread on your grocer's shelf, or it could be a flip that a flipper is doing. Again, it also can be development deals. So you buy a piece of land, you develop it. The next day after the project is completed, you put a for sale on the property. That is inventory, and it's specifically prohibited from being exchanged.
Interesting. How do you declare your intent? Is this something that you have to just keep, you know, in your personal journal, in your nightstand, so that in case the tax man ever shows up at your house, you've got it written down? See, here on June 30th, I wrote down my intent was to hold this property. Or is this some other area that you declare?
Well, I'd recommend doing that, right? You could put it in your journal and you could say, this is what we intend to do. The more evidence, Clayton, the better. Mm-hmm. Now, what they're really going to look at, though, is your tax filings. And the tax filings are a good audit trail or a paper trail of what your intent was. And if you are showing the property on your taxes as a rental, you're depreciating that property, you're reporting the rental income and expenses, and you're doing so for at least 2 years, that is a very good evidence of your intent, and you should be able to pass any audit. You know, I've been doing this for 15 years and I've seen thousands of my clients get audited. And the ones that win their audits are the ones that keep great records and have that, you know, 2 years minimum of tax returns showing the property as a rental, producing rental income. Now, interestingly enough, a property does not have to necessarily have rental income to be an investment. Land, for example, is held for its speculative future value. And land, as long as it's held for at least 2 years, even though it may not produce income, could also qualify for 1031. So there's some gray area as well. But what we like to see, most of our investors are buying apartment buildings, rental homes, small commercial office properties, and those will produce rent. And the tax filings are going to be a good evidence of your intent on those type of properties.
All right, great. So we've got intent and your tax returns, a good trail there. How do you go about getting a 1031 exchange? Where do you start?
Well, you're going to start with owning an investment property, right? And you're going to decide at some point what you're going to do with that. If you're going to keep it forever, or if you're going to transition from that maybe small investment property into something bigger with better cash flows. So you're really going to look at your long-term plan. What am I going to do to build wealth? And am I going to get there with a duplex, or do I need to upgrade to a 4-unit, an 8-unit, a 20-unit apartment building? So most of our investors start small, and at some point they decide, all right, we need to transition into something better. Maybe our properties appreciate it. Maybe there's better uses for our equity. We can leverage into a better cash flow producing property. And then they're going to decide to do an exchange. You put your property up for sale. And once it gets into escrow, you're going to need to call a company like mine. We're an exchange accommodator. You cannot do an exchange without an exchange accommodator. So we are a very important part of the process. We're going to make sure that you're in compliance with the tax code. We're going to prepare all the legal documents that are required by the IRS. And we're also going to hold funds for you during the exchange process. Just like a 401k, the government allows for a tax deferral of your assets as long as you aren't in constructive receipt of the sale proceeds. So think about the 1031 like a 401k, right? You've got that tax deferral benefit, but you need to work with a custodian in order to hold the assets. Well, that's what we are in the 1031 exchange world. We're a custodian. We're going to hold those sale proceeds or those assets that come out of the sale, and we're going to make sure you're in compliance with the tax code.
So, okay, being in compliance with the tax code, and you mentioned at the top buying an or having an investment property. Explain this for me. If I've got a primary residence and I'm selling that property and I decide, you know what, I just want to rent. I just want to rent from now on. So I'm going to rent and I'm going to buy a bunch of investment properties with the sale of my primary residence. Can you do that?
Yeah, good question. The sale of a primary residence is not going to qualify for a 1031 exchange. Now, the good thing, though, Clayton, is that you know you have different tax laws that govern the sale of different types of real estate. So 1031 exchange can be applied to the sale of any investment or commercial property, anything that's used for investment or business purposes. On the primary residence side, when you're selling your home, you have what's called the homeowner's exemption. It's section 121 of the Internal Revenue Code, and many of your listeners have probably taken this. Section 121 of the Internal Revenue Code basically says that if you have lived in a primary residence for two of the past 5 years, when you sell that home, you're able to avoid paying taxes. Now, if you're single, you can avoid paying taxes on the first $250,000 of gain. And if you're married, you can avoid paying taxes on the first $500,000 of gain. So different tax laws apply for different types of real estate. Homeowner's exemption is for your home. No need to use me, right? That's not going to be an exchange. You've got your home. That's just a filing on your tax return up to $500,000 of gain tax exempt. For your investment property, that's when the 1031 exchange comes into play.
Interesting. Now, we mentioned requirements is one of the areas we wanted to cover. Are there any other requirements you just didn't cover there that we need to get out of the way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned that there are four basic guidelines or requirements for a successful 1031. The first is that you're selling and buying the right type of assets. So rule number one is that the properties involved in an exchange need to be held for business or investment purposes. So make sure your properties qualify. That's rule number one. Rule number two, when you do your exchange, is you need to meet your reinvestment requirements. So if you are going to plan on 100% tax deferral, you need to reinvest all of your cash and purchase property equal or greater in value. So for example, if you go out and sell $1 million of apartment buildings, whether it's one or two, and you plan on deferring 100% of your tax liability, you've got to go out and buy $1 million worth of investment property using all of the cash that was generated from the sale. All right. And this is a tricky point for some people because some people think, well, geez, I sold the $1 million property, but I'm only getting $500,000 in cash. So why don't I have to just go out and buy $500,000 worth of real estate?
Right.
Well, you've got to replace the value of what was sold. So if you had debt on the sale property, you're likely going to have to replace that debt so that you're buying enough real estate. You sold for $1 million, you need to buy for $1 million or more.
Or more. So the same or more than what you've sold it for.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Great. And point number three, so the third requirement.
Yeah, third requirement is you've got a time frame in which to complete your exchange.
This is really important, right?
Very important, yeah. And we're on a limited time frame. So you got to get out and do your homework, figure out what you're going to buy, do your homework, do your due diligence, because the government only gives you 180 days in which to complete your exchange. The timeline starts the day you close escrow on the sale. You have 180 calendar days, Christmas, holidays, all included, to purchase and close on the replacement property.
Now, do you also, okay, so you're, when you have 180 days from the sale to get the deal done, to get the 1031 done, what do you need to put in place before you close. Otherwise, none of this is all a moot point, right? If I don't call your company or I don't call another 1031 exchange company ahead of time, then I'm in trouble. I won't be able to do this, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you're not going to call another exchange company. You're going to call me, but but if you don't call me, you're not going to be able to get the exchange done, right? You cannot be in constructive receipt of your sale proceeds. And we've had this happen, and it almost happens, unfortunately, on a weekly basis where people call our office and say, well, geez, I've closed last week. I was planning on doing an exchange. What do I do? Ugh. Well, at this point, it's too late. If you've already touched the money, if you have constructive receipt of those sale proceeds, you are out of luck. You're a taxpayer. So very important that you get a company like mine involved prior to closing escrow. Now, you can call me the day before you close escrow. We can set up a rush account for you, or you can call us right when you get in escrow. Very importantly, anytime before the close of escrow, though, we need to be involved.
Wow. Very, very important. I've heard horror stories with people that they think that they can retroactively do it, and they end up getting hit with this massive tax bill. All right, the fourth requirement.
So fourth and final requirement, Clayton, is that when you do an exchange, you have to identify what you're thinking about buying on day 45. So although the government gives us 180 days to complete the exchange, day 45 is crucial because that's when we need to nominate in writing what we're thinking about buying. And unfortunately, the government only gives us two ways to identify. The most common way to identify on day 45 is to use what's called the three property rule, where you get to select any three properties of any value. Now, you might be thinking, well, geez, three properties, that's not enough. I'm going to sell $1 million property and I want to go out to Texas and buy 15 small rental homes. Well, you can do that, but when you identify on day 45, you have to use what's called the 200% rule. The 200% rule does not limit any number of properties. They limit a value, and that value cannot exceed 200% of what you sold. So it gets a little tricky on day 45. Number one, you have to identify. And number two, you've got to pick which rule you're going to use, either the three property rule, any three properties, any value, or the 200% rule where you're capped at 200% of the value of what you sold.
So I'm a little confused about the three property rule. To your point, let's say I sell a $500,000 home. That's how much profit, right? Maybe I had $250,000 mortgage on it or whatever, but I'm making $250,000 in profit. So all in $500,000. And then I find three properties that maybe add up to, do they have to add up to that same amount or greater?
What you purchase has to add up to that amount or greater.
Okay. Right?
So you can identify three properties of $250,000 of value each. And if you buy two of them, you have a successful exchange.
Right. And then that extra 250 is icing on the cake. You better bring cash to the table to close on that because you're going to need that. But at least half of that is taken – or three quarters of it is taken care of by those first two properties. And then the 200% rule, you can – who's doing the evaluations? Is your company then hiring an appraiser or is this kind of down to the gentleman's handshake of comps in the neighborhood kind of a thing?
Yeah, good question. So what you have to do is be able to prove in an audit that the values were legitimate. So typically what's going to happen is a client will sell a property for $500,000. And if they're just looking to purchase one replacement property, they will probably identify three properties, each of about $500,000 or more. And when they nominate and officially declare on their day 45 in writing the values, they are going to use the listing price that the agent selling the property is marketing the property for. And I've been doing this for 15 years. I've never seen the IRS challenge the values because the values are pretty clear, right? You've got a sale price listed on the MLS or on any of the data services where the seller is expecting to get, and you can use that price as your identified price.
Right.
So if you're just looking to buy one, two, or three properties, you're going to use the three property rule. Where the value gets a little bit more interesting is if you're going to use the 200% rule. So let's say you sell for $500,000, but you want to go out and buy 10 $50,000 properties. Well, in that case, you're going to use the 200% rule to nominate those 10 or 15 properties that you may buy. And then what you're going to use again is the the value that you best determine. Now, someone may be asking $50,000 for a property, but you're going to offer $40,000. So on your identified list, you can make an argument that that property is worth $40,000. So the value determination obviously is something that you're going to use your best judgment on. We're going to help guide our clients on how to fill those identification forms out.
Okay. So yeah, for instance, I had, as an example, we have a lot of our customers at Morris Invest who buy properties through us. You know, as we are a turnkey provider, so they will buy five properties at once. We had one of our doctor clients, he had to buy 10 properties through us, you know, because if each of our properties are in that 40 to 45,000 range, he had $500,000 from an investment property that he had sold. And he was then, he wanted to buy 10. There were going to be a much higher return on investment, much higher ROI. And so he had to identify them. And we were able to identify them ahead of time so that he hit by that 45-day mark, and they all hit that, they all hit that value number. And so 10 of them equaled about $500,000 for him, and then he was golden. He was right on that number.
Yeah, and Clayton, we see that happen quite a bit in the 1031 exchange world, where a seller will take a highly appreciated asset in a place like California or New York and exchange from those states into other states where they can just get a lot more bang for their buck. Now, we're based in California, so I see a lot of my investors selling in California and buying turnkey properties in other states. And I'll give you an example. You know, I've been doing this for, as I mentioned, a long time. And back in 2010, we had about 30% of our clients exchanging out of state. We ran the numbers for last year, and it was closer to 50%. So a lot of our investors are looking at buying those kind of turnkey properties out of state that just produce better cash flow.
Right. Yeah, it happens all the time. And a lot of times our clients were wondering, well, can I get 10 properties? It's like, yeah, just give us a heads up. You know, they sell fast, but we've got to put them together and get them lined up for you. But we can always take care of that. And then especially that transfer, that's exactly the whole point of the 1031 exchange. You talk about that. So you've got an asset, maybe you own it in Arizona or something, or California, and it's, you know, maybe the return on investments, maybe like a 2% ROI, really, really low return. And they're paying through the nose for it, or they paid through the nose for it. And it's, they've got five, you know, it's 500,000, 600,000, but it's not generating them really any income or not much income. And then being able to transfer that to now buy 12 properties with a really high ROI that are now producing, you know, five, six times as much cash flow. This is precisely the reason you would want to do it and then not pay taxes on it.
Yeah. Imagine if you sold the property and just paid taxes. Like I said, a third of your wealth goes to the government. So you've got 33% of your profit gone. Now you're going to invest that in the stock market. You've got to get phenomenal returns just to make up for that tax loss. So the 1031 exchange is, as I mentioned, a great wealth building tool. You're keeping all of your money working for you. You transition into better producing income properties, and you're really achieving kind of the American dream of building wealth.
We are running out of time here. I want to kind of dive into the defer and die strategy. And you mentioned the long-term deferment. So first of all, that's your mantra in the office, defer, die. What does that mean?
Yeah. So one of the strategies that almost all of our clients at least consider is the three D's of investing. And you hit the nail on the head, defer, die. So what happens is you'll have clients that will start off small, as I mentioned, with a 2-unit building, exchange into a 4-unit, then an 8, then a 20-unit building. And at some point in their old age, they're going to decide, well, what the heck do I do with this building? I'm getting up there in age and I'm thinking about cashing out. The problem if they cash out, though, is that they're going to pay taxes on that transaction and all of the deferred gain over the years of investing. So if they cash out on a $5 million apartment building after 25 years of investing, they might be faced with a $1, $2 million tax liability. So I always counsel my clients, do not cash out unless it's absolutely necessary. If you need cash, you might want to think about it refinancing the property. But definitely don't sell it unless you have to. Own that property until you pass away. Because one of the best things about the exchange is that when you pass away owning your real estate, your heirs, most likely your children, will inherit that property at what's called a step up in basis. Essentially, the basis in the property steps up to fair market value. The capital gains tax liability goes away. It dies with you when you pass away. Your kids can get that property through the inheritance process, and the day after your funeral, sell that apartment building for $5 million fair market value and pay zero in capital gains tax liability.
Amazing. Amazing. What does that mean for them as an investor if they want to hold on to it?
Yeah, so the clock resets, or the basis resets. So at the inheritance point, your children are going to inherit that property for $5 million. If they sell it, there's no gain. But if they decide to hold on to it, they're only going to pay taxes on the gains that they've earned through their holding period. So if they hold on to it for another 5 years and it appreciates to $6 million, well, they've got some gain to deal with. But really, the benefit is that they're not dealing with any of the previous owners, the parents, in my example, any of their gains throughout the last 25 years that the parents had deferred taxes.
So those two strategies to just get out of it or keep it forever.
Yeah, essentially, you know, at the beginning we had talked about, you know, two long-term strategies. So the defer-defer method of investing is where you just never sell and you just hold on to the asset until you pass away and you and the capital gains tax liability dies with you. Now, some of our clients say, well, geez, isn't there another way I can get out of paying taxes while I'm still alive? And there is. One thing you might want to consider is a strategic acquisition via a 1031 exchange into a property that you would not mind eventually living in, right? So if I sold it a $5 million apartment building and bought a $5 million home on the beach, rented that beach property out for the first 2 years, and then booted the tenants out, and then I moved into it, that's perfectly legal. If I then lived in that beachfront property long enough and owned the property long enough, when I eventually sell it, I could potentially take my homeowner's exemption, which we mentioned earlier in the podcast, if I'm married, allows me to avoid paying capital gains taxes on up to $500,000.
That's great. So, folks, this is such a powerful strategy, and this is really an incredible way for you to explode your, you know, explode your portfolio, explode your passive income, and really to keep taxes at bay and keep the tax man away, so you can keep more of the wealth that you've been building. This is really great. Any sort of final thoughts for us on how people can take action, connect with you, and get started on doing a 1031 exchange if they've got a property they want to leverage?
Yeah, happy to help out anyone who has questions or needs just a general consultation about the process. We're happy to chat with. Clayton, can I give my phone number?
Sure, absolutely. And we'll include it in our show notes page so that if anyone's driving right now, they don't have a pen, just head on over to morrisinvest.com/podcast. And on that page, we'll have Leonard's phone number there. But go ahead and give it out.
Yeah, so we can be reached at 877-471-1031. And I think the best piece of advice I can give is, you know, do your homework. These 1031 exchanges can be challenging because of the time frame. So the more due diligence you do up front, the more information you have before you get involved, the better the whole transaction will go. And we're happy to assist in that regard.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for your time, Leonard. This has really been illuminating and diving into some of these details. I really appreciate you sitting with us this afternoon.
Yeah, anytime, Clayton.
And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing. And once again, thanks to all of you for your kind 5-star reviews in iTunes and for pushing us up there, and for Inc. Magazine recognizing us as one of the top business podcasts. Thanks to all of you for your kind support. We publish this podcast Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and we'll be back here on Monday with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. So right now, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor, and start to build that passive income and legacy wealth that Leonard and I were talking about. We'll see you back here on Monday, everyone. Have a good one.